Welcome to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast. I'm your host, Earl Carruthers, and I have been a serial cannapreneur in the growing, processing, and retail space for over 8 years. And we are here to learn together to get a well-balanced understanding of cannabis and cannabis products. Tune in every week for quality cannabis education for your canna inspiration.
Okay. Streaming gods. Let me know I'm live. Come on, give me a signal. There we go. It says we're live. Cool. All right. I'm sorry for being a little bit tardy on here, but there's always a replay. You guys can catch it anyway. Hello, and what up, though? Welcome to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast Show. Today, we're going to be talking about the history of Rick Simpson. Oh, yes, RSO. That's what we're going to be talking about today. We should be live on all our platforms. I think I got some green check marks. Let me know if you're hearing me. Okay, watch me on Facebook. Let me know if you're on YouTube, all that jazz. This is totally interactive. If you have tried RSO and you're on before, we want your opinion as we go through the history of it. There's some claims about RSO. Can it cure cancer? Can it not? Of course, you know, we're not doctors. We can't say from a federal standpoint what can and what cannot. But I want to know some testimonies out there. There's a lot of RSO out there. A lot of different methods actually right now making RSO. So we're going to be talking about that. Again, this is the Cannabis Therapy Podcast Show. Our goal here for the show is to help you avoid bad reactions with cannabis through education, through a different series. We get into the history of cannabis. We get into the science of cannabis. We get through making connections through cannabis. And here today, we are talking about RSO. This is more of our therapeutic side of cannabis, so that we can all consume cannabis more comfortably. And consuming doesn't mean that you personally have to try it, but at least if you're around someone, you're more educated, you still feel more comfortable with what they're doing. But when they're our consumer, they're not going to eat your head off, because it's not true. That's all propaganda. So this is a Cannabis Therapy Podcast Show. I have a very special guest. I'm going to bring him on in a second. If I do this, are you ready to rumble? Introduction. We have Lee Brian from First Respond Fuel. He's known for support First responders with access to medical grade hemp that is totally THC free. Some of his big accomplishments, or one of his biggest accomplishments, was loads of donating time of educating the community and supporting veteran and first responder organizations. And something that's impressive is that he's recently spotlight speaker at the Lucky Leaf Expo. Yes. He also was part of a homegrown weed summit. If you guys check that out, without any further ado, let me bring on Lee. Lee, say hello to the people. What's going on, brother?
Man, doing great. Happy early Thanksgiving, and thanks for having me on here.
Nice. I have we have a third person that just joined. I'm about to add him in a second. But Lee, can you give us a little bit about what you do over on the Yeehaw side of Texas? Is that okay to say?
Yeehaw? Oh yeah, we say Yeehaw down here. That's normal. I retired from riding a fire truck and ambulance about 3 years ago, over 3 years ago, and then it led me on a journey for about a year across the United States, visiting cannabis, hemp farms, extractors, you name it, looking for a natural solution for the problems we as first responders face mentally and physically through our careers. And that led me on a journey and allowed me to create First Responder Fuel, the first CBD supplement geared towards first responders. And one of the important things on that was to making sure that it was THC free, so we don't have to worry about our jobs. We're also one of the first companies in the United States to do third-party independent drug testing to back up that as well. So that way we have peace of mind for those first responders that use our products. Also heavily involved down here in Texas in legislative processes for cannabis, as well as a lot of consulting for startups, businesses, farmers, you name it, anything and everything to do in the hemp and cannabis world, we've got our fingers in and trying to make those positive strides
to hopefully bring it to the forefront and hopefully one day get it legalized and allow options for people.
Awesome. 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 I'm curious. Is there, I know we're talking about first responders and sometimes there's testing requirements. Is there any type of legal testing for being a first responder when it comes to THC?
Absolutely. Anybody, if you're first responders were governed under the Texas Department of Transportation. And so truck drivers, fire department, EMS, police, military, they're all doing random drug testing. I know for me in my department that I worked for, it was a random. You showed up to work, and as soon as you walked in the door, it was, you got to go downtown and pee in a cup right now. And so they definitely test for THC as well as other narcotics in the system. And that's just part of the job.
Okay. And those, have you found those who have been taking hemp-based products, not testing positive for?
If they take our products, they don't test positive because, again, we're THC-free. But I have heard of definitely first responders across the nation that, you know, they go into a gas station or they have no idea, uneducated, taking a CBD product, not knowing what's inside of it. And that 0.3% that they're allowed to have by law, that will build up over time and cause you to pop positive on a drug test. And so, you know, if they're not educated on that or not getting a good quality product that can back it up with testing, absolutely, there's people that have lost their jobs over that. So that's why the testing and being open and transparent about those products it's critical for first responders, military, and others that get tested.
Gotcha. Thank you for that. Also, we have right underneath you, Lee, we have the Prophet. Prophet, can you hear us?
Yes. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Thank you for being fashionably late, brother. We appreciate you.
At least I'm consistent.
Yes. You are very consistent, brother.
I was listening to what this nice gentleman was saying, and I completely agree with you. And we always talk about like the law and the federal standard of, you know, what a fail is. And, you know, it's as of now, it's 50 micrograms per microliter, which, you know, to a user of all cannabinoid products, that's a drop in a bucket. To a brand new user who's never used it, it's a lot. So it's like, how do we get the standard to get updated so first responders can get good product but not, you know, be in jeopardy of losing their jobs?
Got an answer. I know how to fix it.
well, hold on. This is a whole nother show. we're gonna get into that. I like that. Actually, I'm gonna write that down. That's a very good topic. I like it. Let's know if you out there, if you can hear us okay. I believe Jen was saying in the background we were kind of a little choppy. Excuse our microfiber, rocket fiber, supposed to be the fastest internet in the world, not working right now. But it's all good. It is what it is. We're going to keep pushing through. So, Prophet, we're going to talk about the history of Rick Simpson Oil. And one of the things I want to kind of get into is full spectrum THC. I'm curious your guys' opinion. And products like RSO, which ideally... which stands for Rick Simpson Oil. I know if you're new to the cannabis game or if you walk into a dispensary and you see the words RSO, you really don't know what that means. It's Rick Simpson Oil. We're going to get in kind of some of the history of it. But this product is supposed to be full spectrum. Should that be the gold standard for everything? Lee, I will ask you first, and then Prophet, I'd like to get your opinion. Should full spectrum, like RSO, if it's made correctly, and we're going to get into how it's made, full spectrum, should that be the gold standard for how products are served in the cannabis industry? Curious of your opinions.
I think when it comes to cancer and disease, absolutely. On just general day-to-day, I wouldn't say so because you've got a huge segment of the population that can't handle THC. And so, you know, they have just a negative, their bodies don't like it, doesn't process it well, causes them to not have an enjoyable experience. Aside from that, when we talk about disease, specifically cancer, I think absolutely, because what we know through studies overseas, Europe, Israel, when you add everything together in that plant, CBD, CBG, CBN, terpenes, THC, all of that together has a dramatic positive effect on battling certain diseases and cancers, period. To just have one, you're missing out on the other benefits that the rest of that plant brings to deal with those specific issues. And so I think when you start talking about disease and illness, absolutely, as a gold standard, you want to be able to bring all of that together so you can have an encompassing, what I call, attack on whatever it is that you're fighting. And, you know, to synergistically bringing all that together, absolutely, I would have to say all of it has an important effect on things versus just doing one or the other.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I respect that. And that sound like that made a lot of damn sense. Prophet, what about you? What do you think, brother?
Yeah. So, you know, in the development of the plant and what they've been able to genetically, you know, pheno hunt out in the cannabinoid hunts, you know, we have THC dominant full spectrum. We have CBD dominant full spectrum. And we even now have CBG dominant full spectrum, mm-hmm. where in my mind, full spectrum is you take a specific biomass crop and do an extraction on it, run it. And before you do any other form of post-processing in terms of distillation, that product is decarbed and syringed, and, you know, on the THC side in dispensaries, you always see it as this just black goo. And when we look at which full spectrum product is the best, you know, that should be the gold standard, I think of, you know, what exactly are you going after? So like you were mentioning the study overseas, you know, there's an Israeli study in particular that talks about THC's efficacy as a full spectrum product against cancer, very hyper-specifically, the modulation of the CB receptors, depending on where the cancer's at, because it's not a cure-all, because there isn't CB receptors in 100% of our body, but it's in enough key places to have a dramatic effect, and you're dead on about that. And I think of now the development of the plant, full-spectrum CBD products mm-hmm. have some of the most amazing anti-inflammatory benefits ever. You know, when you look at the anti-inflammatory benefits from full spectrum CBD products, and then you look at full spectrum CBG products and think and note the studies that show the anti-anxiety relief from the full spectrum CBG product. So I'm a big proprietor of full spectrum only because when you ultra refine out everything to a one cannabinoid, there are micro cannabinoids and micro cannabinoids that come off the plant naturally that add to that synergistic effect from the different, you know, cancer or anti-inflammatory effects or anxiety effects. That's why I'm a big fan of full spectrum, because those micros really do add that benefit that maybe we haven't necessarily discovered yet. But I completely agree with what you're saying with isolating, because any amount of THC in your system over time builds up, and until there's a standard that allows for a higher number, you have to put out something that people can use and get the benefits of without putting themselves in a bad legal or work position.
That's what's up. That's some good, because my follow-up was going to be, are there reasons where full spectrum would not suffice or is not needed? Or products wouldn't be, or why would we not make a full spectrum? I think both of you guys kind of answered, but I guess, would you kind of iterate the scenarios where maybe full spectrum would not be the product that you would recommend based upon what scenario?
I would. Well, CBN comes to mind instantly because it's not grown, right? It's a decarboxylate, it's after Delta 9, after THC decarboxylates into Delta 9, it's a degenerative, rust, when rust rusts, the process of a degradation. It's a degradate. Thank you. It's a degradate of Delta.
You're welcome. And you're welcome. I got your back. Degradative. I got you.
Yeah. It's what happens when Delta 9 degrades.
Gotcha.
Heat and UV light. So, and that is an amazing sleep aid. Like, I mean, what was the last statistic I read online was, and I'll send you the article so you guys can have it. It was 5 milligrams of CBN is equal to a 20 milligram Valium.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow. And like, so, that's insane. That's, no side effects, all natural. Heck yeah.
We actually, our sleep aid has, we incorporate CBN in that. And see? So,
At the same time,
you have to be careful because there are certain components. This is where I would say, you know, a one size didn't fit all. Okay. We know this from our testing. Again, I have a medical company as well. And working with the avenues that we have, we get to do a lot of stuff as far as testing and just research. We know that CBN, there's some people always tell our clients, if you take Benadryl and it doesn't knock you out and it has the opposite effect of you're wired, that's not the product for you. It's going to have that effect. Kind of the same with THC. There's some people that just physically can't
anxiety
handle that. It makes them, it's not fun. And so with that, you have to change. Now, can I still get the THC compound into the body without heating that up and changing that molecular structure to where you get a psychoactive high? Absolutely. You know, you can juice that raw. And since that molecule hadn't been heated up, you're still going to be able to get the benefits of that THC compound molecule to do its good, but not get that psychoactive high. So I think you have to be careful and take it. I kind of look at it as when I ran calls, you know, each patient was unique. What was the problem and what do we need to do to address that specific problem? For the most part, the large population, I had the wide gamut of things that fix things. I always had those one-offs though that wouldn't fit into. So I'd have to think outside of the box, or we would have to go down different avenues. So I think it needs to be very specific and tailored towards that patient or client and understand what they can and can't handle, what are they fighting and battling, and then curtail and make something that will give them the greatest effect without, you know, the negatives that sometimes go along with certain chemical compounds that they just don't process well.
Thank you. So I know we're getting into full spectrum, and I love how we're talking about tailoring and maybe isolating. That's almost like the future of cannabis we're getting into, and I love it. Now, this does tie into Rick Simpson, and I want to tie it in real quick, and as we get into Rick Simpson, I believe we should talk about the history of it. If any of you have your own personal understanding of the history of it, I will kind of run down just some notes that I kind of made of the history. Who's a person? Rick Simpson actually is a real human being. It's not just a product name. Just like Tommy Chong is usually, you hear Tommy Chong, is you think of cannabis, or Jack Ayer, you think of cannabis. When it comes to Rick Simpson, a lot of people think of cannabis. He's actually, I believe, is from Canada. And it began with the accident in 1997, where he was injured on the job as an engineer. He addressed his symptoms. His doctor prescribed him medications that had little to no effect, even made symptoms even worse. And after reviewing a documentary, Simpson began to self-treat himself with cannabis with improved results from prescriptions. In 2003, Simpson was diagnosed with basal cell carcinoma. I said that word out loud. Cool. Mm-hmm. A form of skin cancer, because Simpson had used cannabis personally for other medical ailments, he set out to see if it could be a benefit for his newly found condition. He, in his own research, he came across a study from National Cancer Institute that concluded THC was successful in killing cancer in mice. From there, RSO was born. And then how RSO kind of came to be. With this information, Simpson thought it was ways to directly target the affected areas found on his arm. His final answer was a highly potent cannabis extract that was easily made without high-tech equipment or processing. In fact, the oil was so refined that at the end of the day, His deep, rich brown color, syrupy consistency. After applying the oil topically to the basal cells, Simpson was shocked to see the cancerous growth disappear in just 4 days. And in awe, he obviously began shouting the fact to rooftops. Hence why he's an icon and thought of the idea that we could cure cancer today with an oil like made from an extract like Simpson did, which is now called RSO oil. Anything that I've just said about the history and kind of how it came to be that you guys want to add, or is that kind of sums up?
That's accurate. Here's what's interesting on that story, especially with his skin cancer. His doctors failed to recognize what he did and said, nah. They refused it. They refused to accept the fact that this natural organic compound healed him. And, you know, that's something that we battle here in the United States as in Western medicine. And it's not just with cannabis. It's anything natural. And you start looking at holistic options. Western medicine, it's ingrained in us that you got to take these pills. You got to do this certain regimen. You got to do this certain treatment. That's just how it's always been done.
Right.
Instead of looking at that natural compound. So I thought in that story, that was something interesting to me is he actually went to the doctor and like, look, I didn't do chemo. He didn't do radiation. I simply use this and it's gone. And they failed to recognize that because it goes against the grain of what we're taught and discussed and preached here in the U.S. since 1937. So
true.
One little
true.
Thing on that I noticed on that story.
True. That's a very good point. Very good point. Now, how, from your understanding, how was it made? From my understanding that he took a solvent, and we're going to kind of talk about what a solvent is. And Prophet, I know you're the processing king over here. Mm-hmm. What a solvent is. So a solvent in the flower to isolate the chemical compounds from the flower. So he was able to take a solvent to isolate and separate the beneficial compounds from the flour and kind of cook that off in a rice cooker. And I believe the solvent was isopropyl alcohol in this scenario, but you also can use high proof like Everclear or other kind of alcohol as well. You cook it off, and then after you cook it off, you have this tarry substance, which could get syringed up to a syringe or scooped up into a mason jar. And that's kind of what the oil is, and it's a full spectrum oil. It's containing CBN, CBD, THC, CBG, THCA, and the list goes on. Maybe even contains the terpenes and the flavonoids as well. I don't know about that, but that is my understanding of how it was made. Does that sound like the method to you guys? And we can start with the Prophet. Prophet.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great start. The terpenes and flavonoids definitely come across as well. Essentially, he stripped out, you know, everything that was soluble in the, you know, the ethanol. We'll just call it, you know, for conversation's sake, the ethanol that he used to do the extraction. I cook it off, you know, in a rice cooker. You know, ethanol has a low enough boiling point to, you know, boil off into the air, and dead on, what you're left with is a most of the time a black gooey like black dark black gooey substance. I'm a goo man. All the goo men out there that are listening to this, it's a hell of a thing to handle.
Yep.
So that's the okay. you want to use Everclear, and you want to take it down to a point where it's like 99% oil, because once it's like 99.5% oil, it's so thick and gooey and it's impossible to work with at that point. You have to have for anybody who would ever make RSO at home, to have something that's syringeable, you know, it's especially too, once it hardens, you know, that's the other part of it. Just throwing that out there real quick.
Yeah. You got to have a catalyst to cut that to keep it viscous, so it will flow and not harden up. You can start adding stuff of like MCT oil, grapeseed oil, stuff of that nature to help dilute the thickness of that to where you know, you can put that into a coffee, a syringe, a spoon. You can,
just got to get it inside you.
Yeah.
Gotcha. No, hey, Miss G, she's out here and said, I'm sorry if I'm a little choppy, but I know everybody else sound good. So cool. And she said that RSO helped a relative. And we're gonna kind of get into some stories too, of some of your guys' personal stories of RSO and if it helped you or other people as well. Now, could you tell me? Are we understand this is a true story, not like a fairy tale, like Bigfoot out here, that this man used this oil in this process and then helped, you could say cure or relieved or removed his cancer. If we can't say the word cure, it definitely helped him fight that cancer. What are the roadblocks of studying this method to treat cancer as a standard? Lee, if you want to jump in and then we can go with Prophet.
It's the damn government and pharmaceuticals, plain and simple.
Industrial complex.
You know, that to me, that's when we're looking at medical stuff, you got pharmaceuticals in the government that are roadblocking those tests and processes. Even though, and here's the jacked up part, the government knows good and well the potentials of this plant and what it can do. So much so that they have patents that are very specific towards illness, pain, and disease that fall under cannabis. Mm. So to me, it's like they know what the potential is. But, you know, here's the reality. We look at the cost of prescription medications. They're outrageous. You look at the cost of this plant and what it can do in the huge spectrum of what it can provide, and it's relatively or extremely cheap compared to that. So you've got a lot of factors that go against, you know, really money and power on that aspect of it all. And that's why we're not getting that research, other than you're starting to see some research in the states where it's legal. But of course, you can always revert back to Israel and Europe and mm-hmm. other countries where they've been researching this for decades. You know, they don't have that same roadblock that we have here in the United States. So to me, that's something that's pretty stinking interesting of how do you get a patent on a natural plant that grows wild? You know, it doesn't make any sense other than unless you know something out there that you don't want others to be able to get access to or get a hold of. So to me, that's huge. And, you know, you look at the fact of we know that it can have so many positive effects when it comes to disease and illness.
Mm-hmm.
That would be, you know, if this one plant can cover so much of that gamut, you have to look at what is that going to do to the pharmaceutical industry and the loss of billions of dollars. You know, we look at the fact of we know that it's not an addictive plant, but we sure as hell have an opioid crisis in this country due to, hey, anytime you have surgery, you deal with cancer, you deal with anything else, they're giving you pills, which then can sometimes lead to addiction and other issues. Guess what? We don't have that problem if you worked with just this plant. So I think that's a whole nother podcast, and we don't have enough time in the day to go down that rabbit hole. But I think the reason we don't see more of it is because of governmental regulations, roadblocks, and you look at the pharmaceutical industry. We're not even getting into the ag industry of, you know, the cotton and paper industry. Yeah. So just on a medical side, those two factors right there are what's preventing this from moving forward like it should.
Gotcha. Government and pharmaceuticals was the top answer here. Survey says Prophet. Same.
Yeah. No, just like the military industrial complex, the healthcare industrial complex, it's all the same thing. It's a giant money wheel. We're seeing it with COVID right now. What was it? 80% of Congress owns stock in Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson & Johnson. It really doesn't matter whether or not the vaccine works or doesn't work, or it doesn't. Everybody's going to take it no matter what, period. No matter what. And you're going to take booster shots forever too, no matter what, because we're going to keep feeding this wheel. So I completely agree with what you're saying.
Okay. 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 Now I'm going to move on. So we see there's some roadblocks and some people be like, because there's some people may think, this is like, fairy tales, far-fetched, whatnot. But there are people, and even Ms. G talked about, she made a comment that she bought some capsules and kept them in the refrigerator, and we will open them and take rice grain size. And by the time she has surgery, the cancer has started to decrease and move outward. Now, she mentioned capsules, and my next question is there, and Rick Simpson applied it topically in his scenario. Now, is there any advantages from your guys' standpoint of taking it orally and actually ingesting RSO versus applying it topically? Do you have any insights on the different methods and what the advantages are for if you take it, if you ingest it? And Prophet, we can start with you.
So in the case of Rick Simpson, one of the studies that I read noted he created a high alkalinic environment with the RSO oil he was using topically. And that was, the cannabinoids created that environment, and over a consistent period of time created a scenario where cancer, especially, topically on the skin immediately every day, wasn't in a environment created to be thriving. And that's what caused the cancer to subside. Internally, it is a modulation of your endocannabinoid system and the different CB and CB1, CB2, and ERC sections. I'm blanking on the word right now. Receptors. There we go. Receptors throughout your nervous system and in different portions of your body, your lungs, your organs, different portions. And to what Sir, you were saying earlier, I completely agree with you. With THC, for example, there are some people who get amazing mental benefits from it. And there are some people where it destroys them with anxiety, because from a psychological standpoint, their body's psychological CB receptors heightened an anxiety that may already be there, but they have internal coping mechanisms to deal. And now you give them something that makes them have hyper anxiety. But on the opposite end of it, because I have a grandma who has incredible amounts of anxiety, whenever we give her something that we want to give her that calming effect without the anxiety, we pair it with another full spec cannabinoid like CBD or CBG. And like with her, I go right with the CBG, and the extraction technique we use is an amazing preserver of the natural acids. So when we do RSO, and just for people out there, if you ever wanted to make RSO, I always recommend not doing a full decarb. We call it a half carb. You halfway decarb the cannabinoids from their acidic to their decarboxylated form.
How you do that?
Both aspects, and to get a more full spectrum, entourage synergistic effect.
So a half carb versus a full carb, full decarb. Usually, like I guess you say, a full decarb is about 30 minutes at around 220 to 250 temperature-wise in an oven or a...
Roughly. I always tell people 45 minutes at 220 and it's done. It's
okay,
done, it's a gram or 10 grams. Anything over 10 grams, and it's you just got to...
It depends on the
surface area of the bowl you're using, the depth, the width.
What's a half carb?
A half carb, I would say, would be half that time. I would say 220 for 10, 15 minutes.
Okay. So same temperature, just half the time. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I always tell you, bring it to its boiling point and let it bubble for 10 minutes.
Okay.
Substance is boiled and it bubbles for about 10 minutes is usually a good half carb scenario.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. Lee, anything about ingesting cannabis?
Yeah, we know it's kind of weird. What we found out was CBD and, hemp derived cannabinoids, those can be absorbed through the skin and go directly to the source, and a lot of therapeutic benefits.
Okay.
THC itself acts a little different. THC, yes, it can be absorbed, but that molecule needs to attach to a fat molecule if you're wanting to get a relief psychologically from anxiety, depression, stuff of that nature. So ingesting, I kind of look at it this way. If I'm putting it on topical, I'm losing probably part of that process. Anytime you can sublingual, which is going to be the fastest rate of absorption into the bloodstream, sublingual is your best route. It can sit there, get directly into the bloodstream, and we're not losing any potency. Anytime we ingest and it has to go through the digestive system, you are going to lose a little bit of that potency and strength because of just the natural digestive process. But again, that's going to go through the body, have a longer lasting effect. Then you have smoking. Smoking is going to get into the lungs, and where that gas exchange takes place, those molecules are attached and straight to the body it goes. So you've got multiple varying routes, but I know with everybody, it's you know, a treat each individual separately. You may have some where smoking doesn't, you know, some people just don't like it, or the effect is typically shorter, whereas an ingestion process is going to last a lot longer. And I'm going to get it through the entire body. Everything's going to be able to benefit from that. Topical, it's going directly to a source, a very specific source. So I think you have to look at what are you trying to accomplish and what is the best route of absorption to accomplish that goal, that end goal. So gotcha. I think it's, you know, it can be, it's not as simple as just, well, just smoke. Well, that may not be the best route. Sometimes ingestion, sometimes it's topical, sometimes it's sublingual. I mean, again, it's going to vary on what are you trying to accomplish and a multitude of factors on maybe what's the best route. But hands down to me is going to be a sublingual intake of that, where it gets directly into the bloodstream. It's not broken down through digestion and it's hitting everything. So that's the best route. Now, again, when you do sublingual, you have people, when it comes to taste, they go, oh, it tastes nasty. Okay, then a capsule may be a better option for you, where you don't have to taste that and just digest. Just understand that you may have to vary your amounts due to how much is lost through the digestion process.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned a couple different ways to consume. We talk about smokable, we talk about sublingual, and we talk about ingesting it. What is the most creative? And there's a question by Clinton we're going to get to as well, which leads to this. But what is the most creative? And it could be funny. What is the most creative way?
Rectal. To consume?
Yeah.
From a medical perspective, I know people that have battled colon and colorectal cancer. Well, let's think about that. If I take it, you know, orally, it's got to go through the whole process. Well, guess what? By the time it hits the colorectal area, it's already been digested, processed. I'm losing all of those benefits. I'm not maximizing them. Versus you put it into a capsule or straight oil and you take that rectally, that will be going and get absorbed directly to where it needs to be. You're not losing the potency aspect of it all due to the digestion process. So honestly, the most creative has been, I would say, rectally for specific types of illnesses to get it directly to that point. But question. You also have to remember, too, it's kind of like, you know, hear people back in the day, and I guess they still do it today, I don't know, that would take alcohol and rectally intake that. Why? Because it gets straight to the bloodstream and it's incredibly potent. If you do THC that way as well.
I have to ask. So if you're taking it rectally, now usually I see Rick Simpson in pill form or in syringes. Are you just taking a syringe and just...
That is an option. I would say you'd want an exact dosage amount. And again, I'm not a doctor. Don't claim to be a doctor. But if you're taking something for a medicinal purpose, whatever that is, you want to make sure you're getting the right amount. You're not getting too much. You're not getting maybe quite enough. So honestly, I would be looking at a capsule form so you can make sure you're getting the exact dosage and not just a guess. I don't know about you. I'm not like a dog, so I can't look down there. You don't know how much you're getting. Whereas you put that into a capsule form or a suppository type intake, I know exactly how much I'm getting and it can do its job on there. Gotcha. And it is, people get a little uncomfortable about, oh, I got to put something there. It's another option when you're dealing with something that if somebody's nauseated, vomiting, can't keep anything down, that's the next best route to be able to absorb and take medications, and you don't have to worry about throwing it up. So to me, the most creative, or I'd say uncomfortable for some people to talk about, would be a rectal intake of cannabis.
Thank you. And Prophet, I feel like you got a story you want to share us, or he has something you want to add to that.
I've been tentatively listening to our friend explain rectal repositories. I think that takes the cake. I have, so from a process side, cannabinoids, from a bioavailability standpoint, process the best in our bodies when they are digested and they make it through the liver, like Delta 9 THC, for example. You know, if you want to get, and this only applies to getting high, it applies to nothing else but getting high, but this hyper specific thing, you know, Delta 9 turns into THC 0000OH when it hits the liver, which, you know, like 15 times its effect. But on a, like you were saying, it really totally depends on what you're treating. You know, there is no, you said this, you know, earlier, and I couldn't agree with you more. There is no one way cure all for everything. You know, it's so hyper specific to each individual ailment, and you're dead on. You know, if you have colon cancer, and you know, that is the way, that is the depository way to get the cannabinoids right to the spot to, you know, create that same high alkalinic environment that, you know, cancer doesn't thrive in. And that's the whole idea of, you know, RSO and Rick Simpson oil from a cancer perspective, is it's, gotcha. you want to create an environment that cancer doesn't thrive in.
Gotcha. Now we got a question from Clifton here, and get you guys' opinions, is what's the best way to make smokable RSO? We're kind of talking about some of your creative ways of consuming RSO. Now smoking it, we've talked about the taste, you know, we talk about ingesting it, we're talking about doing it sublingually, and I know you talk about smoking it too. He's also talking about absent of the chlorophyll. So one,
this does exist. This does exist. It's just called something else.
Okay. So one, what is the best way to make smokable RSO? And then two, what is the best way to do it absent of the chlorophyll?
I'm going to revert to the Prophet on that one.
Yeah. So like when you go to a dispensary and they're selling any type of BHO dabs that have been naturally extracted with a butane, you know, style propane style solvent that have a mild hint of plant wax in it, because that's generally what comes out in most of your BHO. If you get a 100% plant wax dewaxing at that point, in my opinion, just because we've spent the last decade focusing on trying to make like that perfect full spectrum dab that has all the horrible taste constituents filtered out while also keeping all the natural, you know, cannabinoids, flavonoids, and micro plant wax, you know, polyphenolene profile to give you that perfect extract that doesn't taste like death. So I always recommend to people, go to a dispensary that has dabs for sale. You know, if it says on the container, you know, 85% THCA with a, you know, 2 or 3% terpene profile, that means that right there is your smokable RSO. But to make it RSO, you have to decarb it. And this is where that half carb, full carb decarb method comes in that we were talking about earlier. Depending on the, like our gentleman in the middle was saying, what effect you're going for.
Lee.
So like I have a grandma who doesn't sleep well. Well, I wouldn't want to give her a completely fully decarbed, because the massive amount of Delta 9 might hit her too hard. In the same breath, I may want to overcarb it to get more CBN from the Delta 9 to give a more sleeping, less psychoactive psychotropic effect. So it really all depends what you're going for. But to answer your question, dispensary dabs that are made with butane, propane, will be the closest thing you'll get to a smokable RSO absent chlorophyll.
And then decarbon. Okay, so if you were to make BHO, BHO wax, and you purged it from its solvents.
Assuming the BHO came out like golden or orange or orange red, you know, not brown. If it's brown, there's definitely chlorophyll in it, which at that point, then it's like standard RSO.
Okay. So come out golden, you could take that and you can decarb it for 40 minutes at 220 or half carb it at 220 for 20 to 15 minutes. Okay. There you go. Thank you, Prophet. Now question on that does, not on that per se, but does RSO lose its efficacy if it's kept in a fridge or if it's smoked? Opinions.
Ingestion. With time, everything degrades with time. Again, it's going to be, what is it? If it's kept in a dark, cool place, then it's going to last a lot longer versus in a hot, humid environment where, you know, that degradation process is going to accelerate. So again, keeping it in a cool, whether it's a flower or an oil, and if it's made right, you know, that oil can last a long time. But if you're treating something, then you're usually going through that product at a faster pace. So it's not like you're going to be sitting there, you know, hoarding it for a year. Those amounts, when you're dealing with specific disease and illnesses, are pretty substantial on what they take in to take care of things. So you usually go through it pretty quick. But the short answer is yes, it will degrade slowly. It's just if you keep it in a cool, dry, dark place, it'll last a lot longer.
Cool, dry. Okay. So not doesn't necessarily have to be in a fridge, just somewhere that's
cool, dry. You know, we know with flour, it's best to put that in a like a colored jar, mason jar, where the UV light can't get to it. UV light is going to break that, you know, that plant down, dry it out, and cause other issues. You set it out in the sun, you're going to create temperature extremes. You're then going to get humidity and stuff like that in there. I mean, there's just all kinds of ways you can not help yourself on preserving that, but essentially cool, dry, dark, and it will last quite a while. Refrigerator's fine too.
Gotcha. Or maybe you know that guy who's making it by the batch fresh, you know, every single other week or so. If only we knew somebody like that. It's okay, Prophet. another question I would say is, what is the best way to keep track? I know we're talking about dosing. I know Tamara and Miss G talked about our rice grain amount. And Prophet, you spoke about earlier, you know, one person could get super anxious with it. Someone could really get calm and go to sleep. What is the best way to kind of track the dosing and what's a good dose to kind of start off with?
You know, it depends on, you know, again, like we were talking about earlier, what you're going after, age, body weight, body style, eating habits. I mean, I've found people who eat more need to take more. People who eat less don't really need to eat a lot. It really all depends on your metabolism. And, you know, I have a biochemist partner who's in the pharmaceutical industry who's forwarded a couple different studies that showed your body on the CBDA side, very hyper-specifically CBD, cannabidiol and cannabidiolic acid. So CBD and CBDA, very specifically, your body can only intake 50 milligrams of, 50 milligrams of that a day, totally, for the entire 24-hour period. So anything after
of THC?
No, of CBD or CBDA.
Oh, okay.
So for like CBD users out in the world, you know, so we do a full spec CBD oil where one dose is 66 milligrams. Because my theory is you don't get it all by the time it gets into your body. You pee some of it out. but 1 milliliter, which is, we tell people half once a day or half twice a day, 1 milliliter is the daily dose. So you don't want to take the full 50 milligrams once. You want to take it twice a day or even three times a day, because you're not going to get everything from that one dose. So it really comes down to what you're trying to treat and, the amounts. My mom, for example, she has back issues. She's been taking ibuprofen her entire life. I tell her to take 2 milliliters a day. So it guarantees she gets all 50 milligrams in her body, and she can't live without it. And she takes the same oil that she ingests and puts it on her back in the same spot. She had a car accident when she was younger, so it's discs, bone spurs at this point. And it's a world of difference. And that's from a one-step extraction process to an MCT oil emulsion. And the product, speaks for itself, Michigan grown. So it's like, it's totally possible. It just comes down to that trial and error, because the same thing doesn't work for my grandma, who has advanced pain.
Gotcha.
So
it, always it's, say start low and go slow.
Yeah.
Move your way up to it. When you're looking at cancer, we know that cancer patients, when they're going this route, they're working up to a gram a day in many cases. When you look at a 90-day deal, I want to say trying to remember, I just was going through some stuff the other day, upwards of about 60, I think it's 60 grams over 90 days. You're working your way up to that gram a day. That's a lot.
Yeah. How much that costs? That's insanity.
But at the same time, when you're starting to talk that amount, you're going to have some people that just can't handle it. So we, the prophet said, we can add CBD to counteract that psychoactive effect of that and allow them to get those dosages that they need in order to hopefully be successful. But again, everybody's different. I know people that do a gram a day and others that do RSO and are taking minute amounts like a grain of rice. Yeah. It all depends on what are they fighting, and they created their cannabis cocktail very specifically to whatever it is they're fighting. And certain different diseases may take more than others if you're using cannabis as an option. So again, it's start low, go slow, work your way up to it. And you'll find out what works, or they will find out what works for them as that progresses. But there's enough. Google's your friend. There's a lot out there. You can get, do some research on whatever it is you're fighting, and you will find out there studies. Technically, they're not going to be scientific, but you're going to have testimonies of people that have actually overcome certain things.
And Reddit is your friend.
You can use that regimen of going, hey, here's what I use. Here's how I did that. And it's at least a starting place for you to get started and build from there.
Awesome.
Earl, one thing I want to throw out there real quick too is that all RSO isn't the same. So, one dose of RSO from one person or one dispensary might be different from RSO that you get from somebody else. It you could have 55% cannabinoid RSO and you can have 80% cannabinoid RSO, but black goo is black goo.
Black goo.
Testing.
Goo.
Get from anybody. Ask for test results. If they don't have good looking test results, they don't look real. Take a sample. Get it tested. Testing. Because you would hate to give something to a family member that's in pain, that's sick, that really needs it, and it poisons them because you don't know what you gave them.
Absolutely.
Feel you, brother. Thank you. On that note, this was a great conversation. Great discussion on the history of Rick Simpson oil. Some of the benefits we talked about. The benefits of Rick Simpson oil. We got into how Rick Simpson oil is even made. Got into dosing about Simpson oil. We got into some creative ways to get freaky with Rick Simpson oil.
Get your freak on.
No, it's all good. Any key takeaways that you guys want to... I think we summed up right there. Any other key takeaway? I know, Prof, you talked about not RSO is treated the same. Lee, any?
I'd say, again, Google's your friend. There's a lot of data out there. You do have to dig for it. I mean, the fact is they just don't want it out there and available. But you do some digging. There's a lot of information out there. Lots of studies that can be found from Israel, Europe, that have been going on for decades. Testimonies from people that have overcome very significant illnesses and disease with it. So just research, get with quality people, whether it be a dispensary in your state, town, area, doctors that deal with cannabis and illnesses that revolve around treating it with cannabis. There's doctors out there that do that holistically. And most of them are going to be in states where it's legal, but do your research and look for transparency on any product you're taking. Make sure it's tested, and you should find answers.
Yes, yes, and research. And check out, we got the CannabisTherapyNetwork.org hub. So if you go to our website up there, CannabisTherapyNetwork.org, click on the free resources. It'll take you to our hub where all of our content is searchable. So you can definitely check that out as well. Go through all the searchable content. Anywhere we talked about Rick Simpson oil, there's content in there. You can search that. And then stay in touch with Lee. Lee Vernon, we got First Responder Fuel. We have his logo up here. We have his personal email. We have his social security number up there as well. you can search him down. I know, Lee, you talked about earlier, if someone's taking an RSO and maybe you can add some CBD, almost making a little cocktail. Is that something that you offer as well, where people can kind of get some CBD products from you that's people can trust?
On our all of our CBD products are going to involve everything minus the THC, just because of the nature of who our client base is. But we include, you know, the terpenes, we include CBD, we've got CBG products, we've got CBN products. The beauty of what we do is we are vertical from seed to sale. We do have a FDA approved lab. Where everything is done. We do third-party testing. We do third-party drug testing as well. So we try to be very transparent, and we have control over the product from start to finish. So that way we can, with integrity, give people a high-quality CBD product. And from there, you know, if it's going to be THC and you're needing large amounts, I have to refer people to, hey, you got to go to a state where it's legal. And there's options there so you don't get in trouble on that. So
awesome. No, that's great. And it's great. But if someone wanted that THC free CBD dominant product, they could reach out to you for that, and that can help them balance. Cause some people, if they take it, they get very anxious, but they can help balance that by grabbing some products from your website.
Absolutely. It will counter the effect of that psychoactive high. If you're having to do THC for whatever therapeutic reason, and you don't want that psychoactive high, CBD will help counter that and lessen that effect.
Well, Lee, this has been a great conversation. It's a pleasure reaching back out and connecting again, my brother. You're always a pleasure to talk with.
Thank you for having me on here. Love getting on here and just educating people on the amazing benefits of this plant.
Awesome. And then maybe in the future we can educate on what's the best barbecue sauce out there. I keep hearing you guys got some real barbecue sauce in Texas. Is that true?
Oh, come on down. We'll show you. Nobody can touch barbecue like we do down here. I mean,
I keep hearing that. I hear that. I'm going to have to try that out. Vegan barbecue. You guys got vegan plant-based ribs yet?
No. No. I'll beat you with a real rib. You come at me with some vegan. No. I'm going to beat you with a rib of a cow. No, get out of here. No such thing.
Oh, man. I'm gonna come over to the first Texas vegan barbecue row house. I'm gonna see how well I do.
Man, you won't last long in Texas.
All right, brother. It's been a pleasure, man. Thank you very much. We'll talk soon. And everybody out there, as we always say, keep life rolling. We'll check you next Wednesday for another episode. Peace out. Thanks for listening to the Cannabis Therapy Podcast. For more cannabis therapy blogs and resources, check our website, CannabisTherapyNetwork.org, CannabisTherapyNetwork.org.